Parshas Tetzaveh, the Sicha is in Chelek Aleph, in the first volume of Likutei Sichos. On the Pasuk, V'yikhoi lecha shemen zayis, zoch kosis lamoir, that the people should bring to you pure olive oil prepared for the lighting of the menorah. On this, the Gemara says that there are three kinds of shemen, three kinds of oil. And for the menorah, you had to have the shemen harishin. You have to have the first kind of oil. I guess the highest kind of oil. We've already spoken many times that in Torah, and particularly in those in Yonim, those subjects that are connected to the Mishkan or to the Beis HaMikdash, that the Gemara says that v'shachanti b'seicham, that God's dwelling in the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash is really the dwelling in each individual Jew, because every person is himself a Mishkan or a Mikdash. So all the Avedus, all the details that are described concerning the Mishkan are also true of the person. In Torah we find that there are three levels. There is water, wine, and oil. The revealed part of Torah, that's called water. The hidden part of Torah, that's called wine. And the secret of the secret part of Torah, the deepest part of Torah, that's called oil. And we find that oil floats on top of wine, so that it's higher even than the level of wine. And as it is with all subjects in Torah, this is true and applies to the individual, to the detail, and to the general, to the collective. And so that where you have three types of three levels of Torah, water, wine, and oil, you have them also within each of them. So there is the water within water, and the wine within water, and the oil within water. And the same is true with the oil, that the oil, the level of Torah that is called oil, the Chassidus of Torah, the study of Chassidus, contains within itself also the water, the wine, and the oil. What is special about oil that makes it different from water and wine is that oil by its nature permeates, soaks through whatever it touches. And so it is also spiritually that when you learn Torah itself, you could remain a separate, apart from the Torah, remain a separate entity, not merging with the Torah. But the Torah doesn't merge with you. But when you learn Chassidus, Zazin, Dizazin, the oil of Torah, then that permeates, like oil, it permeates through and through, so that the person becomes one with the Torah, like the letters engraved in the stone. Not like letters written on parchment, where the ink and the parchment are two separate things and could get separated. But the letters engraved in stone, there is nothing there but the stone. So there is no artificial connection there between the letter and the stone. The stone itself becomes the letter, and the letter itself is the stone. And that's what happens when a person studies Chassidus, that it permeates through and through until he becomes Torah. The difference between the study of Chassidus and the study of the revealed parts of Torah: the revealed part of Torah was given to human intelligence, and you have to learn it and study it with your human intelligence. And that's what makes it possible, what creates the condition in which a person can become arrogant from the study of Torah. Because the nature of human intelligence is that the more you learn and the more you know, the more you feel your own importance and your own significance. But in the study of Chassidus, we study not about human intelligence, but we study about God, and we study about the insignificance of the world, and therefore it not only doesn't lead to arrogance, but it actually brings bittul. And that the same is true also within the Pnimiyas HaTorah itself, between wine and oil. Since the Pnimiyas HaTorah was given in such a way that it can be understood, even the Pnimiyas HaTorah can be understood, so because of the understanding and the ability to understand Chassidus, that part of Chassidus that we can understand, there is again an ability, a possibility of becoming arrogant, of building arrogance. And that's why it has to be kosis lamoiz, that in the study of Chassidus, you have to bring a bittel and a humility to the pnimius of the Torah, and that comes through the davening. And that's why before you study Chassidus, you first have to daven. Now concerning the Mizbeach, that was the smaller Mizbeach that was made of gold, that sat inside the Mishkan, which is described at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh. The commentaries ask, why is this Mizbeach, the gold Mizbeach, separated from all the other furniture of the Mishkan? All of them are described in Parshas Truma. The Shulchan, the Menorah, that stood in the same room with the golden Mizbeach, and yet the Mizbeach was left for the end and is described only at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh. So the explanation is as follows. The Torah is trying to tell us that ultimately in all the Avedas of the Mishkan, of all the things that are done in the Mishkan, it is the Ketores, the incense that were placed on the Mizbeach, on the altar, that was the gold altar inside in the Mishkan, where the Kayin would go in to do the Ketores and had to be there alone with God. As it says in the Yerushalmi on the Pasuk, V'chol Adam Le'yia Ba'el Me'yed Be'vayi, the Torah says that no one should be in the Mishkan when the Kayin goes in to do the incense. So the Yerushalmi says, the Gemara says, not even the Adam that is described in the Merkava in the vision of Yechezkel. In other words, not even the highest angels are allowed to be in the Mishkan with the Kayin when he goes in to do the incense, to offer the incense. It had to be only God himself and with the Kayin. And this teaches us that ultimately all of our Aveda, the way we serve God, has to be an internal, intimate process between the person and God, without looking for publicity, without looking to make it public knowledge and so on. It has to be done with an inwardness, with a modesty, with a humility. When it came to the making of the Menorah, the Gemara tells us that when God said to make the Menorah, Moshe had a problem. He didn't understand how to make the Menorah. So God showed him what the Menorah was like, and he said, take the gold that is necessary for the Menorah and throw it into the fire. And out came the Menorah. So we have to understand what is so unique about the Menorah, what makes it different from all other parts of the Mishkan, that it gave Moshe such a hard time and Moshe couldn't understand how to make the Menorah. What makes the question even stronger is Moshe already saw the Menorah in heaven. As it says, God showed him the Menorah, and yet he still couldn't make the Menorah, and he had to throw the gold into the fire, and God had to make the Menorah. So we'll understand this by first understanding what the function of the Mishkan was in the first place. When the Torah begins to describe the Mishkan in the beginning of Parshas Truma, the Torah makes two introductory statements, general statements. Number one, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel. That's the introduction to all the laws of the Mishkan. Then the second introduction is V'yikhu li, they should bring all the materials that are necessary for the building of the Mishkan, they should bring it to me, to God. And the meaning behind these two introductions is that the Mishkan was made out of physical objects, gold and silver and brass, copper, which means that from these physical objects we had to build a Mishkan and a Mikdash where God will be present. So the obvious question is, how can a physical object make up a dwelling place for God? You would think that a dwelling place for God is created through davening, through learning, through meditating, But how can you make a place for God? How can you make a mikdash from physical objects? The question gets even stronger or bigger when you take into consideration that the presence of God in the Mishkan was even greater than it is in the higher worlds, in the spiritual worlds. Because in the higher spiritual worlds, there is only a ray of God present, revealed. But in the Mishkan, the whole purpose of the Mishkan was that it should be a dwelling place for God himself, for the essence of God, not just for some rays of godliness. So how can this come about through physical objects? This idea that in the Mikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash, God himself was present, this was primarily in the Holy of Holies. In which part of the Mishkan did we see the essence of God? In the Holy of Holies, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And what was there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? What was contained there? The Ark with the Ten Commandments. And we were told that there was a strange condition there, that the Ark had to be built to specifications. The Aron had to be at 2 cubits wide or long. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a kosher Aron. Then the room in which it is placed, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, had to be 10 cubits long. And yet when you measured from the end of, from one end of the oven, of the ark, to the wall, you would get 5 cubits. And then measure from the other end of the ark to the other wall, you again get 5 cubits. So you would have 10 cubits, and yet there are still the 2 cubits of the ark itself. So the Gemara says that the ark was 2 cubits wide, but it took up no room at all. So here you have an impossible situation, not just a miracle as other miracles, where the law of nature is overruled or canceled, and a miracle occurs. Here, if the size, the dimension of the oven were canceled, it would stop being a kosher oven. So it had to be 2 cubits long. And yet the 2 cubits that it was took up no room at all. So it was an impossibility, not just a miracle. And that is possible only in the essence of God, that transcends all laws, even the law of impossibilities. And that's why all prayers have to go through the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it is called the Gate of Heaven. So wherever Jews are, they have to pray, they have to direct their prayers to Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim, in Yerushalayim to the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and in the Beis HaMikdash to the Holy of Holies, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And why is that? Again, for the same reason. Since most of the prayers, most of the requests that we offer are for physical things, physical needs, for health, for wealth, and so on. And above in heaven, these physical needs are very insignificant and don't bring any great response. Only in the Holy of Holies, which is higher than heaven, which reaches to God himself, there can be a combination, a joining of the highest of the high with the lowest of the low, so that even our petty physical needs are heard and responded to in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies. So we see how great and how holy this place was, and the question then is, how can all of this be produced through physical objects? And that's what Shlomo HaMelech wondered. He was amazed. Hein HaShamayim u'Shmei HaShamayim lo yichal kelucha. The heavens and the heavens of heavens cannot contain God. V'afki abayis hazeh. And yet this house can, does, will. The heavens and heavens of heavens, these are all very high levels of godliness. And yet they cannot contain God himself. They can't contain the essence of God. So how is it possible that a house does? That this house is a vessel, is capable of containing God himself. To make this understandable, the Torah tells us two introductory statements. One is talk to the children of Israel, and the second is they should take to me Truma. On the pasuk, they should take from me Truma, the Zohar makes the following comment. All the objects, the materials, the 13 or 15 materials that were necessary for the Mikdash, the Zohar says they were really all one. Kulachad. They are really all one thing. They're considered one donation. Although they are different physical objects, yet they all become one with the Li, with God, because the creation of the physical comes from the essence of God. Only God himself, the essence of God, can create a physical object. So there's a direct relationship between the etzem, the atzmus, the essence of God, and physical objects, because the highest relates to the lowest. The only problem is that this relationship, the fact that God is more invested, his essence is more invested in physical things than in spiritual things, is not revealed. It is hidden. It's covered up. And that's why we make a mikdash. We build a Beis HaMikdash. Because we need to reveal what is hidden under the surface and bring it out to be visible and appreciated. To reveal what is hidden. So it's not that we're creating something new, we're merely bringing what is there to the surface. That's why it says, Dabar al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, because who can bring this out? Although it's true that it needs only to be revealed, because it is already there, God is already present in the physical, it needs only to be revealed, but who can reveal it? Dabar al Bnei Yisrael, only Jews can do this. Only Jewish souls can do this. Because in the Jewish soul, God is revealed. And that is the meaning of kisikne, that we acquire godliness, that we acquire an awareness of God. Why is it called acquiring? Because in essence, it is already there in the neshama. Just as acquiring something means that you're not creating it, you're not building it, you're simply transporting it from one place to another, from one ownership to another. Before, it was not in your property, it didn't belong to you, it wasn't available to you. When you buy it, you acquire it, then it becomes yours, it becomes available to you. So it's really revealing what is already there, not creating something new. And who makes this possible? This has to come through Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe has to speak to the children of Israel. Because in Moshe, this level of godliness was completely revealed, and that's why he can help the Jew reveal it in himself. And so it is also in making the physical a vessel to the essence of God, that is already in the physical. It is already Li. Only the Jew has to come and reveal, bring out so that it's visible to the whole world that God's essence is present in the physical world. Now we'll understand why Moshe had a hard time with the Menorah. It wasn't that the Menorah was physically so complicated that Moshe couldn't figure out how to make it. The Menorah was made out of gold, and the purpose of the Menorah was to illuminate the darkness. That the whole world, Eidus Lebayi Olam, that everyone in the world should know that the Shekhinah is resting in the Jew. And that's what Moshe didn't understand. How can gold, how can a physical object accomplish such godliness? And to this God said to him, a person, a human being, can't make this, can't create such a thing. God does this himself. He asks only of us, he asks of us that we should take the gold and throw it into the fire. And when a person throws the gold into the fire, then God will reveal how the menorah, the physical object, can illuminate the Mishkan and the rest of the world. We've already spoken many times that the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash applies only to the physical building, to the stones and the wood of the building. But the spiritual Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash which is in every Jew, that remains always whole and complete. When a Jew wants to make himself, his life, a Mikdash for God, a dwelling place for God, God says to him that he should make it from gold, which means that he should take the best of his physical objects, the best of his possessions, the best of his physical talents, and use that, the gold, to make the Menorah. And then God says to him, I am not content with your learning, I am not satisfied with your davening, with all your mitzvahs. I demand from you, of you, that also your physical, all the physical possessions that you have, should become for me a dwelling place. And by yourself you can't do it, God says. It's something that I will do. But what I ask of you is that you should throw the gold into the fire. Take the gold, take your physical life, your physical possessions, and throw it into the fire that you have in your heart. Because by every Jew, there is a fire that burns and longs for godliness. And when you throw the gold into that fire, then you will turn the gold into a Beis HaMikdash. Which means that your physical life, the physical objects of your life, will also become permeated with the presence of God. And what's more, the light that that will produce will illuminate the whole world and will testify, will say to the whole world that the Shekhinah, the presence of God, is in the Jewish people and in the individual who has thrown his gold into the fire of his neshama. In Shulchan Aruch, the Rama brings two opinions concerning Purim Katan. One opinion is that you have to celebrate Purim Katan with drinking and with rejoicing and so on. And the other opinion is that you just have to increase a little bit in your meal in order to indicate that it's a special day. And in order to cover all the bases, he says that you should celebrate and rejoice on Purim Katan, because it says Tev Lev Mishtetamet, that it's always a good idea to be joyful, glad of heart. And in this there are two opinions. Does this refer to the 14th of Adar Rishon, which is Purim Katan, or does it refer also to the 15th, which is Shushan Purim Katan? From the language that the Rama uses, it seems that he also agrees with the second opinion. Because from the word that the Rambam concludes with, V'tev lev mishta tamid, that a person who is glad of heart always rejoices, so that always means wherever there's a possibility, wherever there's a svara, a reason to rejoice, then you should rejoice. On the pasuk v'tev lev mishta tamid, the Gemara says, who is this kind of a person who is glad of heart? That somebody shadaite rechava, that he has a broad das, is broad-minded. Rashi says on the same pasuk, v'tev lev means sameach b'chelkei. Gladness of heart means content with his portion. So we have to understand what these two things mean. Now, you would think that a person is content when God gives him what he needs. If he has all his needs provided, then he can be happy. But when his needs are not provided, then you would think that he would not be able to be happy. So how could it be, Tev Lev Mishta Tamid, that he's always happy? Doesn't it depend on what's happening in his life? So we'll understand this from what the Rebbe Marash said in the name of the Alter Rebbe. We say in the piyut, we say, Merubim tzarchei amcha v'daitam ktzara. The needs of your people are great, and their knowledge, their das, is limited. That's part of the prayer. So the Alter Rebbe said that it's that the two parts of the verse are cause and effect. Why is it that we have many needs? It's because our knowledge is limited. Because if we had a greater knowledge, then we wouldn't have so many needs. And so we understand what the Gemara means, that when a person has broad das, broad-minded, then he is always happy, because he doesn't have so many needs. The explanation here is as follows. God always provides what a person needs. So one's needs are always provided. The problem is that the person pursues what is not needed. He wants more than is necessary. And when you pursue the unnecessary, the maisres, then there's a possibility that you don't get the additional, and you even lose what you were supposed to get. As the example given by the Tzemach Tzedek, that if a person wears a suit that is too big on him, not only doesn't it look right, but it even prevents him from being able to function. He trips over it and it gets in the way and so on. So when you take on more than you need, it actually results in negative. You lose what you should have had. And so it is also in the spiritual that the Torah says that if a soldier finds a woman at war and he wants to bring her home, so he has to shave her head and let her fingernails grow long, which means that when you want more than is necessary, then you end up with less than is normal. She doesn't even have hair, she has long nails and so on. So it begins with being small-minded, with wanting more than is necessary. And that's because he doesn't properly evaluate his position. He thinks he deserves more, and so he pursues more and so on, and that makes him crazy. But when a person has das rechava, when he's broad-minded and he understands himself properly, then he realizes that he has whatever he needs, and it all comes from God's kindness, and so he is happy with what he has. Another thing is that when a person has das rechava, when he thinks on a broader scale, then he doesn't find physical things necessary or important. And so they don't bother him if he doesn't have them, because they're not significant in his thinking. What is important to him are the more valuable things, the more spiritual things, and so on. As the Rambam says, that the sages looked forward to the coming of Mashiach, not so that they'd be able to sit and eat and be comfortable physically, but that they should be able to study God, pursue the knowledge of God without interruption. Yet, when we come in prayer, we ask of God, that's Merubim Tzarchei Amcha, that we do have many needs, and our understanding and our wisdom is limited. So what we're asking of God is that we are not perfect, and there will be times when our mind will become petty. So we're asking of God that even when our mind is petty, he should give us all that we need, so that even when we think on a petty level, we should be content and happy, because he has given us everything we desire. And that makes it possible of Tev Lev Mishta Tamid, that a person should always be happy. When his mind is in the right place, then he's happy for whatever it is that he has. And even when his mind is petty, God gives him even the unnecessary stuff, so that when he's in a bad mood, he'll still be happy.